from KQED.
Welcome to this morning's Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We've come a long way since the days of mandatory water restrictions in 2015. Atmospheric rivers have delivered almost 2 inches of rain to the Bay Area so far this month. And Northern California reservoirs are near capacity, and Sierra snowpack is well above the average for this time of year. But should we start worrying about the next drought? We'll check in on the health of the state's water supply and how the wet winter and spring may affect the upcoming fire season with Paul Rogers, who's here with me in studio, managing editor at KQED Science and also natural resources and environment reporter for the Mercury News. And welcome, Paul.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Well, we've had all this rainfall, huge rainfall, and, well, the six largest reservoirs are full. The real question comes down to, should we still be worried about saving water, and to what extent?
Well, it's a good question, and, you know, in California, we have a Mediterranean climate. A lot of the places in California, from Los Angeles to San Jose to Fresno, get about 15 inches of rain on average every year, which is the same amount, I always like to say, as Casablanca, Morocco. So we should never waste water. However, when we have good years, I think it's incumbent on journalists and meteorologists to tell the public that, because we don't want to be the boy who cried wolf, right? When we have bad years and people really need to conserve and we really are in a crisis, we don't want them to think that they always hear that there's always a crisis. So what's happened this month and this winter is just absolutely wonderful. You know, the reservoirs are thundering at Yosemite. The fire danger is low right now. We've got ski resorts that are still open in the Sierra. And up until last night, it had actually rained 6 of the last 7 days in the Bay Area. That's highly unusual. Normally in May, we don't get much rain at all. We normally get about 3/4 of an inch on average in San Francisco. We've had nearly 3 times that. I just looked this up yesterday, and right now, San Francisco, which has the oldest weather records in Northern California going back to 1849, 170 years, this is the 12th wettest May. And, you know, that's really good. It clears the air. It fills the reservoirs. The streams are good. The fish are doing well. It's just good news.
But it doesn't necessarily mean less wildfires. I mean, that's according to some recent studies.
Yeah? Well, that is up for discussion and debate. You know, I did an investigation. It's been a few years now, but I looked at 40 years worth of rainfall records in California and 40 years worth of fire records with Jan Null, the meteorologist who used to work with the National Weather Service, who works at Golden Gate Weather Services now in Saratoga. And, you know, you hear all the time, if it was a dry winter, people say, well, everything's bone dry. It's going to be a really bad summer. Everything's going to burn. If it was a wet winter, people say it's going to be a really bad summer because we have all this fuel out there. And I thought, well, both can't be right. It can't be worse than average every single year. Just statistically, it can't be. So we looked up all the numbers, and what we found was over the 40-year period from 1970 to 2010, 12 of the 15 worst years where the most acres burned happened after dry winters. And it's the wet winters that actually statistically have less acres that burn in the summer. And the reason fire experts told me is because while it is true that wet winters cause grasses to grow up and grasses can burn in the summer, they also raise the moisture levels of trees and bushes. And so when fires start in grasses, it's harder for them to spread up into the crowns, into the tops of the trees. And so as any camper knows, wet wood doesn't burn as easily as dry wood. Now, you mentioned recent studies. There have been some recent studies that say climate change is changing that. So going forward,
that's the PNAS study particularly, which
yes.
I think the meteorologist you mentioned, Jan, said was done by tree rings, and he was questioning the methodology of that. But they're going back 400 years, supposedly.
Yeah, but, you know, fire scientists measure moisture levels in trees every week during the summer to see what the risk is in what parts of the state. And the higher the moisture level in wood, the harder it is to burn. It doesn't mean you never have fires. It just means when you have a spark from a power line or from a car driving by or something like that, the odds of it exploding very quickly into a giant fire are lower. So obviously we can't guarantee it will be a good fire year. But so far this year, it's been a very good fire year. I just looked this up, and across the West, Over the last 10 years, on average, from January 1 to mid-May, about 1.1 million acres has burned on average in the last decade. So far this year, we're at 230,000 acres. So we're down 75%. Again, it's wet all over the West.
There was a warning flare put out, though, by, I think, National Interagency Fire Center, projecting early summer high potential for wildfires.
Yeah, that was a while ago, and it's still raining.
It's still raining. Yeah, well, we're hoping for the best with all this, obviously. Let me talk with you a little bit about, well, there's a leading article in the New York Times that says they grow the nation's food, but they can't drink the water. And we've talked about this before, how more than 300 public water systems in this state are serving unsafe drinking water to, that's according to public compliance data. And it was compiled by the California State Water Resources Control Board. But this is a shameful thing because you've got about a million Californians who are exposed to unsafe water each year. That's according to public health records.
Yeah, that's right. It shocks the conscience. We have 40 million Californians now, about a million of them, nearly all of them in the San Joaquin Valley and some in the Mojave Desert. In some of the most low-income areas in the state, most of these are farm worker communities, have inadequate wells. They have inadequate treatment systems. Some of the wells during the drought from 2012 to 2017 went dry. People probably remember reading and hearing about the town of East Porterville down near Bakersfield, with literally developing world conditions. People can't take showers. I mean, this is for, you know, more than a year. Basically, the federal government failed them. Kevin McCarthy, who was the House Majority Leader when all this was going on, this was his district. They didn't get any money to help these people. Jerry Brown stepped in, helped with some state money. Now, Governor Newsom wants to take it a step further, and he's proposed a tax of perhaps 95 cents to a dollar a month on people's water bills, urban residents' water bills, that would create perhaps $100 million or so a year to help modernize these systems. Politically, it's difficult. Even though Democrats in the state legislature have a two-thirds majority and can pass taxes without Republicans blocking them, they're a little reluctant right now because the state has a large budget surplus, $21 billion. And because when they passed the gas tax a year ago, one of the Southern California Democrats from the Fullerton area was recalled. And so they're trying to figure out a way they can do this, maybe through the surplus. But Governor Newsom just a couple of weeks ago said he's adamant, and we'll see if he can get it through.
Paul Rogers here with us in studio, and he is managing editor for KQED Science, also natural resources and environment reporter for the Mercury News. And let's hear from you, our listeners. Paul's going to be with us right up to the half-hour mark, and you may have some concerns about water, not only water safety, which we've just been talking about, but also the real question that hovers over this discussion with all this wetness and with all this rain coming down, do we need to be concerned, or how concerned do we need to be about water, and particularly about saving water and water efficiency? Let me give out the number, and you can join us now at our toll-free number. Invite you to do that. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls, so please feel free to be part of the program. You can do that by calling in again at 866-733-6786, or join us by email, forum@kqed.org. Or go to our website and post any questions or comments there at kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. State water leaders, though, Paul, are still urging efficiency, aren't they? They're saying water needs to percolate into the soil. It needs to restore depleted groundwater. And, you know, that's the message that's coming through strong and loud.
Absolutely. In the drought, we drew down a lot of the aquifers around the state because the reservoirs were nearly empty. The good news is that parts of California that have managed their groundwater well and have been good stewards, like the Santa Clara Valley Water District that represents 2 million people in Silicon Valley, you know, for 50 years, what they've been doing is building percolation ponds, monitoring the groundwater, which is 50% of the water supply in Santa Clara County. And when it rains, those ponds fill up, they seep back down, and they recharge the underground water supply. Some places, particularly farm areas in the Central Valley haven't been doing anything like this. They don't want to, spend the money. And I look at it like burning your furniture for firewood. You know, you're just writing check after check after check on your bank account and not putting any more in. And the ground in some of those places is sinking. The water tables have fallen hundreds of feet. So Jerry Brown signed a law that will require those basins to come back into balance, but it gives these areas 20 years to do that. I'm happy to say that in places, again, like Santa Clara County that manage their groundwater well, they have recovered fully from the drought. The groundwater table under the city of San Jose fell 60 feet in the five-year drought, and it's completely regained all that 60 feet with the rains from 2017 and from this year.
Still have to replenish that groundwater basins, though, and also the storage reservoirs, because there is going to be another drought. It's inevitable.
Of course, it's inevitable. In terms of the reservoirs, one of the debates right now is whether we need more, because basically all of the reservoirs are full right now. I checked last night, and in California, the largest reservoir, Shasta, is 96% full. The second largest, Oroville, is 97% full. Folsom is 95% full. So we're just about at a point in terms of surface storage that we can't store any more water. So when reservoirs fill up, it goes down the spillway and flows out to the ocean. Voters during the drought passed Proposition 1, which was a $7.5 billion water bond for a whole lot of projects, water conservation, water recycling, stormwater capture, and also new reservoirs. And as folks may remember, Governor Brown's administration last July handed out $2.5 billion of that money for eight projects. Four are increased groundwater storage projects, and four are bigger reservoirs. So Los Vaqueros Reservoir in Contra Costa County would be raised. They'd build a new reservoir in Santa Clara County at Pacheco Pass, which is $1 billion. They would build a new reservoir in Colusa County called Sites Reservoir, and another one perhaps called Temperance Flat, although that's more controversial, down near Kings Canyon National Park. Those projects got a big slug of money, and I would expect several of them, particularly the two Bay Area ones I mentioned, to be built in the next 5 years. And then we can store more water, so when the next drought comes, we'll have a cushion.
Well, lest we forget, the Sierra Snowpack, which I believe is considered the state's largest reservoir, the source of about a third of the water, 188% normal. I mean, this is where we can get very sanguine, but I think it's safe to say that residents and businesses need to use water as efficiently as possible because, to echo it once again, it's inevitable for another drought up ahead sometime. Let me go to our callers, though, and let's bring Bill in as our first caller. Bill, you're on the air.
Good morning. First, I'd like to say great topic and, much needed talk about this because water is so important here in California, and a great guest. Very knowledgeable, and it's good to hear somebody talking some sensible things about it. So, but my question basically was answered. My question was going to be, are there plans in the books to build new dams and new reservoirs? And he pretty much answered that. But the other thought was, wasn't it back in the 50s when we really were building dams and reservoirs? And not much has been done since that time. Is that correct?
That is true. It's a good question. There are a number of reasons for that. I'll tick them off really quickly. Most of those big dams, and it goes all the way back to the 1930s, they were built on the places that get the most rainfall and the watersheds that generate the most water. And all the good places just about have already been taken. That's the first reason. Second reason is we've passed a lot of national and state environmental laws since then. In the 1950s, there was no Endangered Species Act, no Clean Water Act. You didn't have to do EIRs. You could just get a river and build a giant wall in it and kill all the fish. And there wasn't really much to stop you. There are environmental laws now that make it more difficult. Third is the funding of these things. When President Reagan came into office in the mid-80s, he stopped the practice where leaders in Congress would pay for local projects through pork projects entirely with federal money. He basically set up a cost-sharing formula so that the locals had to put some skin in the game. And that slowed the building of a lot of dams. So usually when we talk about new dam construction in California now and most of the places in the West, we're talking about off-stream reservoirs, right? Places where you're not taking a wild river and turning it into a lake. And there's still lots of opportunities in California to do that. The question is, how much does it cost per acre foot to build a project like that? It's usually $1 billion or $2 billion or $3 billion. Who's going to pay that cost? And finally, Are there other ways to get the water more cheaply? Could you take that $1 billion and pay for everybody in a big city to have a low-flow toilet, or pay for them to take their lawns out, and you might save just as much water?
Let me thank you for the call. That was Bill from Oakland. Let's go to Ruth in Palo Alto. Ruth, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi. My question was also about more dams, because I understand from my Stanford neighbors who specialize in this kind of thing that still a lot of California's water is based in snowpack. And it seems to me that as global warming increases, and I know we might have more big snowstorms, but I'm concerned about, will we get to the point where we don't even have any snowpack? And, you know, just what are we going to do then?
Yeah, good question. And a lot of the modeling that scientists have done in the Sierra Nevada does talk about dramatic reductions in the amount of snow that we'll get in the Sierra. As Michael said correctly earlier, the Sierra Nevada is the state's largest reservoir. It's a frozen reservoir. It's a third of all the water for the state. And we've built our entire system over the last 100 years on the fact that it melts slowly, right? We get it in the winter, and then it slowly melts, and the water comes down the rivers, and we store it. But what if we don't get as much, or it melts much more quickly? We have to have a way to catch it. So there's a couple of ways to do that. You can catch it in new reservoirs. You can also set up projects where you flood fields and let it recharge the aquifers. Or you build, as I say, these type of percolation pond projects where you can recharge aquifers. So we have to be more nimble, because climate change, scientists say, is bringing more of a whiplash effect in our weather. We'll have more droughts that are longer and hotter, like we saw recently, but we'll also have more big, wet, soaking, flooding years like we've seen, because warmer weather evaporates more moisture into these atmospheric river storms.
Let me thank you for the call, Ruth. Good to hear from you, and appreciate hearing from you. Let me read a comment, though, actually get your response to this, Paul, from Joseph, who writes, when variation approaches averages, the notion of normal becomes nonsense. California is a desert with a mountain range that we have sculpted into a magnificent water conveyance and storage system funded by taxpayers. Sell off the assets and get out of the business. Better to rely on groundwater recharged by rainfall in basins, as homesteaders did for 2 centuries, but that means a sustainable human population closer to about 1 million.
I'm not sure how you would propose to take California's population from 40 million to 1 million, but I can't think of any humane way to do that. The reality is that we have 40 million people in California. More people live in California than Canada. One of every 2 Americans who lives west of the Mississippi River lives in California. And as I say, a lot of California gets the same amount of rain as Casablanca, Morocco. So we've built the world's largest system of dams, canals, and pumps to move that rain and snow from Northern California, which gets it abundantly, to the central and southern parts of California, where we have the largest ag economy in America, and we have the second largest metropolitan area. So the future with climate change means that we're going to have to do things differently. We're going to have to be more nimble. We're going to have to be more efficient. We're going to have to recapture stormwater. We're going to have to do a lot more with wastewater, cleaning that, using that to recharge aquifers. This stuff costs money, but we know how to do it, and we can do it.
I was thinking of a number of perverse ways of thinning the population, but we won't go there. But nevertheless, we're talking about the population actually expanding and continuing to expand.
Absolutely. That's what the projections show.
Yeah, we'll get some more of our callers aboard here. Let me go to Novato and Raul. You're on the air.
Yes. Good morning, Michael. You know, it's funny. I haven't heard one mention of the fact that some of this water is not our water. The water belongs to the environment, the trees, the fish, and the idea that we can bottle it up for our own purposes exclusively sounds silly. Also, there's the other thing. A lot of dams in this state are on the verge of failing. There's a dam down in San Diego, Orange County area, that is actually on the verge of major failure. So I think before we start rushing to build more dams, I think we ought to consider that what the environment is actually needing, and rather than just saying we need to bottle up this water for ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments, Paul Rogers. Any response for you?
Yes, good point. We do have billions of dollars in infrastructure costs around the country and in California you know, highways, water systems, dams, et cetera, that need upgrading. There's no question about that. There are also dams that are silting up that are at the end of their useful lives. I did a story a couple of weeks ago about a dam that was on the Carmel River built in the 1920s. It was 100 feet tall just outside of Carmel in Monterey County. It was 100% silted up, and they could have spent millions to take it down. But instead, the water agency there routed the river around it. And now we're seeing steelhead trout come back in good numbers. And the good news is a lot of these rivers are resilient. And if you remove old, outdated dams, if you build a new water supply off-river, you can bring back some of these species.
Is this notion that you can actually restore depleted groundwater levels by mainly flushing down toilets and having the dams do the work?
Well, it depends on where you are in California. There's different geology in different places. In some of these areas in the Central Valley where you've got thick clay layers that have collapsed on each other, it's very hard to restore it. In other parts of California, as I mentioned, the Santa Clara Valley, you can. You just have to spend the money to monitor it. You have to build percolation ponds. And that involves usually taxing farmers as well as urban residents. Farmers don't like to be taxed. And they, in many of these places, especially the Central Valley, are using the lion's share of the water. And so there's a political issue there. Again, just like with dams, how much does it cost? Who pays?
And what is the nature, as you see it, of fracking's effect on groundwater?
That's a very complicated topic, and it depends where you are. Again, there's different geology in different places. There have been some examples where the chemicals that has been put into the ground have caused groundwater problems. We haven't seen extensive problems in California, particularly on any groundwater that people are drinking.
Let's try to get another caller in here, and that's you, Jesse. You're on. Welcome.
Thank you. So, yeah, great topic. Really happy to be listening to it on my way to work, although I have to point out, Michael, that it's fewer wildfires, not less wildfires. But I'm concerned about the watershed in the East Bay. I'm a retired landscaper and irrigation specialist, and now I really focus on trying to preserve our watershed, especially in Richmond where I live. We have major watersheds that affect the quality of the bay as well as the wildlife living in the watersheds. The watersheds are also like lungs that prevent sea level rise from inundating neighborhoods with flooding and so on. And I see us being at risk by having an aging infrastructure of water treatment plants and leaky storm drains that connect up with the sewage drains and so on and so forth. Meanwhile, Richmond's actively courting.
Jesse, let me hold you off there because we're coming up on a break, and thank you for the grammatical. I didn't realize I had said less rather than fewer. We'll get some response from Paul Rogers, and we'll get some more calls on. We're going to extend this for 5 minutes or so. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Bay Area experienced the wettest May, has experienced that, the wettest May in 20 years, and Paul Rogers is with us to figure out what that means in terms of inevitable drought to come, and also just talking about water in general. He's managing editor for KQED Science and also natural resources and environment reporter for the Mercury News, and we're extending this a bit because we want more callers on here to at least get their questions in. And that last caller, Jesse from Richmond, was talking about not wanting to pay more taxes to solve Southern California's water problems. How often have we heard that, Paul? But also, he said he's working with watersheds in the East Bay and he's very concerned about industry pollution. Could we talk about that?
Yeah. It used to be in San Francisco Bay that the largest polluting source was big industry. Factories and the typical image we have of a pipe with red gunk going into the bay. Over the years, as a lot of big industry has left and we have the tech industry and other industries that are clean, that don't have big emissions, it's people who are some of the major polluters. The fertilizers that they put on their lawns, people who don't change their oil in their cars properly. It's called non-point source runoff, and it's a lot harder to address and to reduce than one or two or three factories in an area with pipes. So in a lot of ways, we all are responsible for the health of these watershed areas, which, you know, everything flows downhill into streams, into rivers, into the bay.
Good citizenship we're talking
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. Good stewards.
And here's Michelle. Michelle, you're on the air.
morning. I just had a question. Are we looking at doing something with underground storage for water? I know that, I understand that Germany and other countries do this, and those are the options for California.
Yes, good question. When we think of storage, a lot of times we think of reservoirs, but across California, we have lots of good groundwater basins, and you can't see them, but they're just as important as the reservoirs. And as I mentioned, many of those places have been overdrawn, and California was the last state in the West to really pass some strong laws that said we have to be better managers of that groundwater. It's going to take 20 years in some of these places to bring it back, but the water in the ground does not evaporate like water from reservoirs, and if we can use it wisely and particularly recharge it in wet years like this one, we can have a much more sustainable water supply in the state.
Let me thank that caller, and let's go to Peter next. Peter, you're on with us. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Michael. I was actually wondering about something we haven't talked about yet, the 21st century solutions to this problem, like solar shields on the reservoirs, wastewater reclamation, energy efficient, environmentally conscious desalination, porous concrete, that type of thing.
New innovations, Paul.
Okay, that's a lot. We could do a show on each one of those, right. But I'll take two of the main ones very briefly. Desal, we did build a few years ago.
It's a big one in San Diego, and it's very expensive. Right?
Exactly. San Diego built a $1 billion desal plant a few years ago. It's still chugging along. It costs about $2,100 an acre foot. An acre foot is the amount of water that a family of five roughly uses in a year on average in California. A lot of water we get from the Delta is $400 an acre foot. And water you can get from conservation is as cheap as $100 an acre foot. So, and this is heresy to some people, but California will never run out of water. If we have a drought that's 50 years long, we can build a whole fleet of desal plants up and down the coast. There are other places in the Middle East and other areas of the world that do it. But everybody's water bills would absolutely skyrocket. You'd have, you know, $1,000 fine if you watered grass, things like that. So we know how to get water, but it can get very, very expensive. So it's much more cheap to do the other thing you mentioned, either conservation or recycling wastewater. We can recycle wastewater for $1,000 an acre foot or less. A lot of places around the state, Orange County, San Jose, are doing a lot more of that.
Paul, got to say goodbye to you. We're going to move into another direction here, but I appreciate very much you being with us and always so well informed on this subject. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
That's Paul Rogers, Managing Editor, KQED Science, and also Natural Resources and Environment Reporter for the Mercury News. And